Well, good morning and well done getting here, those of you who've been challenged by the Docklands Light Railway in particular. I think we'll get started now. The format remains unchanged, and the financial headlines then are these. Group revenues at £12.8 billion, adjusted operating profit at £1.092 billion, adjusted profit before tax then £1.034, adjusted earnings per share 102 pence. The dividends per share, which will be voted on by shareholders at the AGM in December, directors are recommending rises 3% to 35 pence. Gross capital investment of £613 million. Now, we've given you gross this year rather than net because we've disposed of a fair number of property assets in particular during the course of the year, and that would have distorted the net number that we usually give you. Net debt reduced to £194 million. As a consequence of cash flows being strong once more. Turning on to the business highlights, overall it was a strong performance. We've had our currency challenges and also commodity challenges, most particularly sugar prices, but Primark expanded its sales, grew its sales by 13%, opened nearly a million square feet of space. Sugar, much lower EU prices as have been well flagged, but the cost improvement program that we've now been talking about for a couple of years has delivered once more. A significant profit progress, and I'm delighted by this, at both ingredients and also agriculture, and further margin improvement for our grocery businesses. With that, for more detail on our financials, let me pass over to John.
Thanks, George. Good morning, everyone. This year, sterling strengthened against our major trading currencies, except the US dollar, and particularly against those currencies whose countries rely on commodity exports. A table of average and year-end exchange rates is included, as usual, at the end of your slide pack. The impact on the income statement this year was to reduce the growth in revenue by £378 million, an operating profit by £31 million, which we calculated by retranslating the 2014 results at 2015 actual average exchange rates. Given the scale of the effect, it's important to understand the underlying changes in both revenue and profit, and so changes at a group and business segment level are shown at constant exchange rates, as well as actual. Group revenue was £12.8 billion, an increase of 2% at constant currency and a reduction of 1% at actual rates. A key influence on this year's underlying performance has been deflation in many of our major commodities, making revenue growth difficult to achieve. The most notable example, of course, is the substantial decline in the EU sugar price. Adjusted operating profit was £1,092 million, down 4% at constant currency and 6% lower at actual rates. Acquisitions and disposals had no material effect on the results this year. Our adjusted profit measure reflects the underlying performance of the business and excludes profits less losses on the sale of disposal, on the disposal of non-current assets, the amortization of non-operating intangibles and exceptional items. So we made a net profit of £8 million this year on the disposal of non-current assets, and that was principally the redevelopment of a former factory site in Western Australia. The amortization is in respect of those intangible assets acquired since September 2004. The charge reduced from £72 million last year to £55 million this year, and absent any other acquisitions, this charge will fall again in 2016, as most of the assets have now been fully amortised. The exceptional charge of £98 million was reported at the half year and related to the non-cash impairment of the group's shareholder loans to Vivergo Fuels following a fall in crude oil and bioethanol prices. Unadjusted operating profit, after bearing this exceptional charge, was 12% lower at £947 million. We've taken a charge this year of 172 million as a loss on disposal of businesses, and there are two main elements in this number. You will recall our decision last January to withdraw from beet sugar operations in Heilongjiang, China. The two uneconomic factories at Yi'an and Bocheng were both sold, realizing a non-cash loss of 100 million. In May, we assumed BP's 47% interest in Vivergo Fuels. As part of the acquisition accounting, we recorded a non-cash charge of £75 million. This was a great opportunity to increase our ownership of this well-invested plant. However, the outlook for ethanol prices in the medium term is uncertain, and we foresee that we may need to run the business at a small loss over that period. As the percentage of ethanol inclusion in gasoline increases in line with EU mandated targets by 2020, we expect the market to move from surplus to deficit, which should lead to a price increase. In view of the uncertainty, we've ascribed no fair value to Vivergo's tangible fixed assets in the group's balance sheet. Net interest expense shows a reduction from £58 million to £53 million, reflecting a lower average level of debt during the year. The private placement notes carry an average fixed interest rate of 5.1%, and £78 million of these notes is repayable in March 2016. Profit before tax was 30% lower than last year at £717 million, but adjusting for the items referred to earlier, the decline was 6% from £1,105 million to £1,034 million. A loss of £8 million was attributable to non-controlling interest this year, compared with last year's profit of £21 million, largely as a result of the lower profitability after interest and tax of some of our African sugar businesses. This is on an unadjusted basis and includes the remaining charge for amortization of intangibles acquired with Illovo. I think you'd be pleased to know then, as a result of that, we'll have an unadjusted and adjusted minorities will be the same going forward. The tax charge was lower than last year, and I'll explain the different components. So the underlying tax rate was 21.3%. in line with the rate used at the half year. The reduction from last year's 23.3% reflects a change in the country mix of profits and the further reduction in the UK corporation tax rate from 21 to 20% with effect from the 1st of April 2015. We expect our underlying tax rate to increase slightly in the coming year, as the mix of profit changes, with more profit likely to be delivered by businesses that are subject to a corporate tax rate that is higher than that in the UK. This will be partly offset by the benefit of further reductions in the UK corporation tax rate that were approved by the House of Commons last week. The stepped reductions to 19% and then 18% are not effective until April 2017 and April 2020, respectively, and therefore will not give rise to a reduction in the current tax charge until those dates. However, these reductions will be reflected in next year's deferred tax liabilities. The other influences on our reported tax rate are the £8 million credit arising on the goodwill and intangible amortisation, which is reducing in line with the reduction in the amortisation charge itself. A charge of £3 million on the disposal of fixed assets. The loss on this year's disposal of businesses does not attract any tax relief. And then finally, a £22 million credit on the Vivergo Fuels loan impairment. So following the group's acquisition of a controlling stake in Vivergo in the second half, we've now been able to take advantage, which we've done here, compared to the half year, of a more beneficial relief for those losses. Earnings and dividends. Adjusted earnings per share fell by 2% to 102 pence. Earnings per share were 30% below last year at 67.3 pence, reflecting the exceptional item and the loss on disposal of businesses. A final dividend of 25 pence per share has been proposed, making total dividends for the year of 35 pence, a 3% increase. Dividend cover on an adjusted basis is 2.9 times. So then moving on to the balance sheet. Unusually for us, net assets reduced and were actually 202 million lower at 6.6 billion pounds. The factors reducing net assets were 432 million negative impact of sterling strength on the translation of overseas net assets and the assets written off or disposed of in the year. Working capital at the year end was 101 million lower than last year, impacted by the strength of sterling on translation and lower food commodity prices. Within this figure, inventories were actually higher, driven by European stock levels, sugar stock levels, and higher new season inventory at Primark. Average working capital expressed as a percentage of sales, which is really the measure that we simply look at, was broadly level with last year at 9.4%. Another year of strong cash generation drove net debt 252 million lower to 194 million at the year end. Now, as a reminder, this is comfortably accommodated by the group's total committed borrowing facilities of 2.1 billion pounds. Now, although our bank obligation is reducing, I think it's worth reminding you, as I did at the half year, but I'll do it again, that a new accounting standard for leasing is expected shortly. So this is going to add lease obligations together with the related right of use assets to the balance sheet. And these will be significant for us as we take account of Primark's leases. The number that comes onto the balance sheet will really depend on the methodology that is actually chosen in the accounting standard, and we have to wait for that. So the methodology and the time for transition have yet to be announced, but we'll give you more details of that when they become clear. Our defined benefit schemes remain well funded, and the net pension liability at the year end was just 16 million pounds. Other net financial assets, the caption you see on the balance sheet there, comprises two main elements. So the first is the mark-to-market value of the forward currency contracts taken out by Primark in its normal course, and typically on a rolling 6 months basis to cover its contracted US dollar garment purchases. The second relates to currency swaps on some of our term debt from US dollars to euros to match our underlying currency assets more closely. The maturity profile of these swaps is matched to the maturity profile of our private placement debt, and the market mark-to-market gains on these swaps are therefore largely unchanged from the half-year position. So although the balance that we see here of 41 million is similar to last year, it's reduced markedly from the half-year balance of 131 million. I explained at the interim results that our forward cover taken out at a weaker US dollar exchange rate would run until August 2015. The reduction in the value of these derivative assets since then emphasizes the extent to which Primark's second half year results were protected from sterling and euro weakness against the dollar. Obviously, as we're coming to the next year, that protection has come away. So currency. Sterling's appreciated against our major trading currencies this year, except for the US dollar. So the shift in the euro exchange rate early this calendar year is highlighted here. And I explained the consequences of this to you in April. Since April, you can see from these charts that the currencies of many of the commodity exporting countries have now weakened substantially. So we could go on to the next slide, please. Here is the Australian dollar, Brazilian real, the rand, and the Zambia kwacha. So our working assumption is that these rates will be with us for some time to come. I mentioned earlier that the impact of currency translation on adjusted operating profit this year was £31 million. If all of these current rates, so not only the ones on this chart, but also the euro and so forth, prevail, we expect translation losses in the new financial year to be of a similar order, around the £30 million mark, with each of our reporting business segments being affected. As I explained last time, the total transactional impact, however, is likely to be greater and will be seen primarily in Primark's margin. A substantial proportion of garments for Primark are sourced in US dollars. The buying teams at Primark have worked hard and have mitigated more than half of the gross impact of the dollar strength that we saw during the last financial year. As already indicated, this will have an adverse effect on Primark margins, which I think you've factored in, and with a likely higher impact in the first half. So now if we come on to cash flow. So we can go to the next one, thank you. Cash flow was again strong, with a free cash flow of £617 million, which is in line with last year. The change in working capital from last year's inflow of £100 million to an outflow this year of £66 million was mostly driven by the higher sugar stocks and Primark inventory. As a result of currency translation, the balance sheets are lower this year. Moving now to capital expenditure. As anticipated, the spend in our food businesses was lower this year following completion of the capital investment programme in our UK bakeries last year. The expansion of Primark is accelerating, and the reduction in capital expenditure that we see here year on year simply reflects the phasing of expenditure, with many large projects coming to fruition around the year end. I expect this number, the Primark number, to increase to over £400 million next year. The redevelopment of the former factory site in Western Australia and the sale of some redundant retail sites drove the increase in cash generated from the sale of PP&E to £72 million. And that's what George made reference to on the first chart. You can see the high level of income we've had from those disposals. The year-on-year movement in the other caption, and that's a movement of £113 million from the minus 51 to the plus 62, is largely explained by the non-repeat of last year's purchase of shares to satisfy future obligations for long-term incentives, and then particularly dividends received from joint ventures and associates, this year being much higher, especially from Strauss's Foods. Now let's move on to the business segment. Primark delivered a strong result. So sales there were ahead 8% or 13% at constant currency. The revenue declines in all of our food businesses were primarily the result of food commodity price deflation, and particularly so in sugar. The profit increases in grocery, agriculture, ingredients, and retail all reflect strong underlying business performance, although they were insufficient to offset the decline in sugar profits. The actual impact of lower sugar prices in the year in the sugar business was over £200 million. So it was actually around getting on for £220 million. But the significant cost reductions, and George will talk about these, delivered by the business were the main factor in limiting the sugar profit decline to the £146 million that we see here. Agriculture not only reached £60 million profit, but the 5% profit margin and 19.2% return on capital employed are notable achievements for this business. The further recovery in ingredients is evident with a near doubling of profit. I'm pleased with the further margin increase in grocery, which reached 9%. The decline of 80 basis points in Primark's margin is in line with expectations and is driven, as a reminder, by a return to more typical levels of markdown this year following the exceptional trading by Primark in 2014. And finally, for me, by geography, British Sugar was the main contributor to the decline in UK revenue and profit, in part offset by growth in Primark. Primark's growth in continental Europe is an increasingly important contributor to the improvement in sales in the Europe and Africa segment, but profit was reduced by sugar in Spain and at Illovo. In the Americas, the improvement in revenue and profit is driven by ACH and the AB Mauri businesses. The revenue decline in Asia Pacific is mainly driven by the weakening of the Australian dollar. In aggregate, the profitability of our businesses in China improves substantially. And with George Weston Foods in line with last year, profit was much improved. So we'll now look at the performance of each of our businesses in more detail, and I'll pass back to George. Thanks.
Thanks, John, and we will start as we usually do with sugar. Two big themes this year. The first one is that huge reduction in the EU price, the effect of that coming through, as John has said, approaching £220 million, but offset by the cost reduction programme, which is now in its third year and is delivering extremely well. Euro weakness against sterling in particular will have an impact on next year's figures. And then the last headline from Sugar is, just to repeat what John has said about Vivergo Fuels and the purchase of BP shares, we do see this as a medium-term opportunity for the group. If I could turn then to the cost improvement programme, as I say, it's the third year of an ongoing programme. It's saved us so far well over £100 million. It's sustainable and it continues. Cost is coming out of our sugar businesses everywhere, really. Sugar extractions are up, factory efficiencies have improved, energy reduction programmes have further to run but are delivering well. We've seen significant overhead reductions, particularly in the UK and Spain, and then agricultural productivity and agricultural efficiency, particularly, most notably in Africa, has also been a feature of this year. Beet cost is a feature then in Europe, both in the UK this year and also in Spain. And in 2016-17, we get a further reduction in beet costs in the UK that has been agreed with the with farmers in this country. Production this year was at a record 1.45 million tonnes. We didn't necessarily, in the UK, we didn't necessarily need all the sugar, but we celebrated the agricultural abundance of the crop and our ability to handle it through four factories. This year we're aiming for something around 1 million tonnes. We now expect to get that. The campaign in 2015, which started in September, is running well. In Spain, we produced more sugar as well, 0.71 million tonnes. The increase largely came out of our factory in the south of Spain, but factory performances were good. That led to cost reduction in Spain as well. In South Africa, we were challenged by a drought. That was the main factor behind the reduction in sugar produced in Illovo from 1.8, 1.9 million tonnes that we would normally expect down to 1.64. China also performed well. Factories, the cane factories and in the south had a good year. It's worth pointing out also that the two remaining beet factories, both in Hebei and Inner Mongolia, are now producing sugar with the efficiency very close to that of European factories. Land efficiency is transformed over the last few years, and factory efficiency is very good too. We can produce sugar out of beet at just about the same cost as we can out of cane now in China. Sugar prices, though, you can see how they've come down. You can also see in the slide on the left-hand side how they've stabilized. I don't expect them to increase significantly in the course of this year in Europe, but I absolutely don't expect to see any further reduction. And then the world market price also has been heading down through the course of the year. It's jumped up a little in the last few weeks on the back of expectations of future crops in Brazil and perhaps India with an effect from El Nino. There is a lot of stock, though, in the system, so I don't expect those prices to rise significantly from here, at least for the time being. Turning on to agriculture, where profits were up 20%, and John has mentioned already the good increase in margins and return on capital employed. The China feed business performed very well. That was part of the contribution to an improvement overall in China. The standout performances, though, were in the specialty agricultural businesses, specialty nutrition, and then AB Vista, our specialty enzyme business. It grew very strongly, and we expect it will grow further. Moving on then down the supply chain from agriculture to our grocery businesses, you know our brands well. You have some of them in your Primark bags that you're either sitting on beside or in front of you. We saw during the year strong profit growth from Twinings Ovaltine and also from ACH. Commodity food price deflation was a characteristic of the year that we coped with, I think, quite well. A high level of competition in bread markets for the 50th consecutive year at least. Further margin improvements across the group, though, up to 9% now in margin terms. And we're also delighted to have acquired and then set about integrating Dorset Cereals. I'll say a little bit more about that business later on. Twinings Ovaltine, the profits grew strongly. We saw record market shares for Twinings brand in the UK, Australia, and Italy. We launched a new range of black teas in the UK, which I think I mentioned at the half year. Emerging markets are more difficult. Ovaltine had a more difficult time as a consequence, but was still absolutely fine. And then it's worth pointing out also, calling out in as well, that in a company which is so commercially led and so brand led, we saw very strong factory performances, and that also contributed strongly to the overall profit growth this year. In Allied Bakeries, the capital investment program is complete. I think there's still opportunity for further cost reduction, but that big capital program is done. We saw bread volumes rise. We grew them through the year. We launched sandwich thins, and that has been a great success. We did see lower margins for bread in particular in the UK through the course of the year, however. Into Dorset, Jordan's Dorset Ryvita. Jordan's performed well. Dorset Cereals has been integrated very well. We are well underway in the program of premiumizing that wonderful brand. We think that there is great opportunity in Dorset Cereals for us. Within Ryvita, we saw lower crisp bread sales, not least because Ryvita Thins grew so strongly through the course of the year. That business overall is doing really well. Elsewhere in the grocery business, Westmill AB Foods, our ethnic foods business, we're seeing recovery in the UK ethnic restaurant trade, particularly in the takeaway part of it. I think that is a testament to the increase in disposable income that people in this country are now enjoying. Patax and Blue Dragons. Blue Dragon maintained their leading positions in the UK retail market, but also saw export volumes increasing through the year. Turning to the States and ACH, the plant sterile campaign, which it continues to drive volumes and premiums in Mazola. I think that campaign has years still to run. Consumers react very positively to it. And then I have to call out the exceptional profit growth that we saw from Stratus, oils joint venture, bottled oils joint venture with ADM that had a super year. In Australia, we lowered the price of our branded bread. The gap between branded bread and own label had got too wide. That worked. Market shares for branded bread are increasing again, and we were pleased with with that. At Don, our meat business, which has given us difficulties in the past, volumes through the factory are increasing, factory efficiencies have increased well. We suffered from significantly higher bought-in meat costs in the first half of the year as the American producers struggled with a virus in their pig herds. The second half was substantially better and gives us a lot of encouragement about how this year might be. Moving then to ingredients, arguably the star of the show. It was the second year of significant profit recovery, and it came across the board in our ingredients businesses. So AB Mauri, which is our yeast and bakery and bakery ingredients businesses, we saw good profit improvement from all regions, and that was great. We also saw supply chain improvement, supply chain efficiencies, that contributed to us as well. And then 18 months ago, we bought a bakery ingredients business from GB Plangia in Europe, and we've integrated that very successfully through the course of the year into our European existing European bakery and yeast businesses. ABFI, our other specialty ingredients businesses, had a super year, a highly successful year for enzymes, and also, but not just there, also profit improvement from yeast extracts, from cereal extrusions, and some specialty lipids. You can see the improvements in margin and also return on capital employed of our ingredients businesses. I think there's more to come. Right, Primark next. Firstly, with headlines, the expansion obviously continues at constant currency. Sales are up 13%. We opened a number of new stores and we saw very high sales densities across all of them. Like-for-likes were up 1%. The markdowns, as John mentioned, returned to more normal levels, and that was the reason behind that reduction in the overall margin of the group. Heavy investment in the warehouse infrastructure, I'll come back to that later. We opened our first store in the US, I'll also come back to that. And just after year end, we opened Granvia in Madrid, and the queue is still around the block. It's 41st store in Spain, and it's absolutely magnificent. Over the year then, the trading pattern, we didn't enjoy much the warm 2014 autumn. We had a very good Christmas. Easter was cold, and then we had a strong finish to the year, so July, August were both good. Like-for-likes up 1%. If you exclude Netherlands and Germany, where we opened so many new stores in a tight geographic area, like-for-likes were actually up 4%. The stores that we opened in Germany and Netherlands all opened well, and the stores that were already open are still trading at above the average for the rest of the group. Elsewhere in Europe, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland were well ahead on like-for-likes. UK was positive, and France continues to excite us all. We opened Lyon just last week. We had enjoyed our, in terms of sales per square foot, our biggest opening day's sales in that store. Boston is trading well. I'm very conscious it's only one store and it's only 8 weeks. But it's very good. In a year's time, we will have a lot more information for you on the US. The second store opens towards the end of November, King of Prussia Mall in Philadelphia. We are very reluctant at this stage to draw too many conclusions from one store and 8 weeks, but so far so good. Let me move on to some of the ranges in store for autumn winter. On the left-hand side, the coat being worn by the girl on the at the back, the blue coat, sells for £20. The cardigan, the girl at the front, is £10, and the gilet, that's the purple vest that she's wearing, is £7. The parka, the man on the right top, is £25. And the knitted dress, the lady underneath her, is £18, all selling well. Now, Christmas is important to us as a business. It's probably important to you personally, and you may be wondering what to buy. We've put together a video. It's not your average TV Christmas ad. Rather, it'll be playing in stores and it will be available on social media. But if we could play, we have about a 3 minutes worth of footage here. I think it's great. Ideas for Christmas parties and Christmas presents. Price, our ranges and our values are two of the parts of the business that we're so well known for. Our store experience, though, is something which is developing too. And these pictures here in front of you are of denim shops in Granvere on the left-hand side and Downtown Crossing in Boston on the right-hand side. I think that they give you some idea of the quality of the shop fit and the confidence of this important range for us. If we move on then to Boston, you may have seen the picture on the left-hand side. That is the iconic Burnham Building in Downtown Crossing. The even more iconic clock on the bottom left, which used to say Filene's. We still have that Filene's sign. It's actually in the store, but it now says Primark. Hello, Boston. The right top right-hand side is the picture that appears on social media more than anything else. And then the trend room on the feature wall on the ground floor again gives you some indication of the fashionability of the fit out of Downtown Crossing. Moving on then to Granvere in Madrid. As I say, our first high street store in Spain, after 40 stores in shopping centres and an absolutely magnificent building. It is the second largest in the group at 133,000 square feet after Manchester. Now, the next video I took myself. It doesn't have great production values, but I want you to look at two things. First, let's show it, I'll speak over it. So this is the inside of Granvere. You see, we've recreated the octagon that the original department store, which closed in the 1920s, featured. And we've also installed some truly wonderful graphics that we can run campaigns across. I think there are 11 screens, and we can roll images from one screen to the next, as we did. It creates a really startling effect for the shopper. From images to numbers, we added 900,000 square feet during the year. We opened in 20 locations. We relocated two stores, closed three, and extended four others. significant new space, in particular this year, Germany, Netherlands, and Belgium, and some large stores in both Germany with Dresden and the other three, and then in Holland as well. Important parts of the final network in Germany, but causing some reduction in existing store sales around them. Going on then to where that leaves us, Germany is now the third largest market by footage. Belgium went from 1 to 4 during the year, Netherlands 8 to 12. You can see the amount of opportunity that still exists in Europe, even before we open in Italy later on in this year, and the one store, obviously, in the US that we opened. Looking forward into this year then, 2015-16, that is, we expect to open 1.5 million square feet during the year. Significant European expansion, particularly in France, UK, and Spain. And as I say, the first store in Italy. 7 more stores in the northeast of the United States, starting in November with King of Prussia, and then going, I think, to Danbury, Connecticut in the spring. Warehouse expansion is keeping up with the sales area growth. We've almost doubled the capacity since September 2013. Spain, Germany, the new depot in the States, another new depot to supply Central Europe in the west of the Czech Republic. We're moving our depot in the UK from Magna Park to a larger site at Islip. And then later in the year, we're opening another new depot in the Netherlands to supply the Low Countries and also France. So, summarize these results. It was a strong operational performance. Sugar obviously saw much lower sugar prices in Europe, but saw really good cost improvements, significant progress at ingredients and agriculture, further margin expansion in grocery, and the Primark expansion continues. Looking forward into this year, we expect to see the momentum, operational momentum, continuing in this year too, so good underlying trading. We do expect currency pressures to lead to a modest decline in adjusted EPS. EU sugar prices have stabilized, the cost improvement program continues. That's good for this year, it'll be good for the future as well. More progress to come from ingredients, grocery, and agriculture have good momentum, and then accelerating Primark expansion, both in the UK, both in Europe and also those 7 new stores in the US. I think this time last year, we will have a lot more to say with a lot more confidence about the US, and we'll probably be saying about Italy that it's too early to tell. So thank you very much for listening to us both, and we'll take questions now.
So, Fraser at the front. Yeah.
Thank you. So, back to Primark. I noticed that the constant exchange rate and actual movements in sales and profits are quite different, and wondered what we could infer from that as to the profitability level of the European business. Is it, you know, by degrees lower than the UK business at the moment, particularly with all the opening costs that you've had in the last year? And then second question on European sugar. At current prices, but with your ongoing cost reduction program, can the EU sugar business be sustainably profitable, or do we need an improvement in pricing from here, you know, if we take away the Chinese and the Illovo contribution, to be sustainably profitable?
Do you want to do the margin one and I'll do sugar?
Yeah, sure. But yes, I mean, the I think everybody's aware that the margins of Primark vary country by country around Europe, and indeed the UK actually today is not the highest. It's virtually the highest, but it's certainly the biggest. And so the factor that you're seeing, Fraser, I think, is, as you've rightly indicated, is obviously the scale of the UK margin, the UK profit. Actually, Spain's margin is actually higher, for what it's worth, than the UK. Some of the other countries in Europe then are a little lower than the UK margin?
Okay. On sugar at current prices, the answer is yes. There are two buts coming next. The first one is that that currency change will hold back improvement this year. And the second one is overhead recovery. That reduction from 1.45 million tonnes to a million tonnes reduces factory loading, reduces overhead recovery as well. But fundamentally, at that sort of 450 euro per tonne price, we will be profitable.
Right. Okay, and could I ask one little final one?
Yeah.
I was intrigued that Ovaltine is under pressure because of economic conditions. I think in Asia, you were indicating, I never thought of it as a particularly sort of economically sensitive product, but just that I'd...
Yeah, sales for the first time actually declined a little in Thailand. The profitability held up with cost reduction programs and mix improvement. But it is sensitive, all food consumption is sensitive to consumer income. And Thailand as an economy has been under pressure.
Okay, the next one.
Yeah.
I've got that lady's name.
Thank you. Just Rosie Edwards from Goldman's. Just one question following up on sugar.
Yeah.
Clearly, the previous question related to prices at 450.
Yeah.
And I think in the presentation you said you don't expect a significant increase in the course of fiscal 16. Is that, however, because the contract prices have been agreed?
Largely, yes. The contracting round is largely done.
Exactly. So
both in the UK
spot
and
spot wise.
Yeah. Spot wise, in some markets in Europe, prices have increased.
Okay.
So we've seen improvements in spot prices in Spain, in particular. They're not transformational, but they're heading in the right direction.
Okay.
And we expect to see the stock levels are much more balanced now, and we expect to see stock levels fall through the course of 16 and into 17. Those aren't conditions that you would expect to lead to falling prices.
Perfect, okay, thanks.
So to give a scale to what George said, it's tens of euros on the price, that sort of scale. Tens of euros, yeah. Okay, great. Warren, here in the middle.
Morning, it's Warren Ackerman at SocGen. First question on ingredients. I think you described it as the star of the show in your prepared remarks. In the past, I think ingredients made over £100 million of profit, so it's nice to see the returns doubling, the margins doubling. But do you think from here that we can see, you know, what kind of quantum improvement do you expect on that much higher base in 2016 on ingredients, the first question. And then secondly, another margin question on grocery this time. I remember in the past we talked a lot about the 10% margin in grocery. We're now at 9%. Again, you know, you talked about Australian meats hopefully improving in 2016, should one infer that we might see the magical 10% in grocery in 2016?
Yeah. Thanks. The grocery final number, as we've always said, is the consequence of the mix of different types of businesses. The meat business in Australia, yes, I expect will improve this year. That'll contribute to the overall. But those sorts of businesses make their return on funds employed on volume more than they do on margin. So a bread business or a meat business, or for that matter, a bottle oil business, is never going to make a 10% margin. Twinings, World Foods, Jordan's will make well above a 10% business. So it's all the changes are partly in the mix and partly in the contribution that everyone makes to profit improvement. I would hope that we do see further improvement in margin this year.
Yeah.
Sorry, the first...
On ingredients, even the bounce, you know, should we expect that to be kind of level?
I don't think... it would be nice to see a redoubling again. I don't think we will. But I do expect to see progress from both Maori and also from the other ingredients businesses.
I mean, on ingredients, I mean, there's no law of nature that says because it was there once, it will necessarily go back, bounce back again. I've never believed in that. But I think there's a good momentum of improvement in ingredients. And I'd be really surprised if that doesn't come through in the this next year.
A final one, technical one. You talked about the accounting change on the leases coming on balance sheet.
Yes, yes.
And it depends on the methodology that the accounting standards apply.
But
you did mention a number of 2 billion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, look, I mean, you know, when I talk to the accountants, of which I'm one, but I mean, when I do talk to the accountants, it sort of ranges from, you know, sort of 1.8 billion to 2.5 billion or whatever. Yeah, two billion as a rough number is really where it I think is the sort of quantum that we'd be looking at. Yeah, Richard at the front here.
Morning. Richard Chamberlain, RBC. Just a couple of cash flow questions, I guess. So just on Primark, I think you say in the statement that your buying teams have successfully mitigated more than half of the impact from the stronger dollar. Is that likely to have any impact on working capital? Are you having to negotiate sort of shorter payment terms, or is there an impact on sort of product quality coming from that? That's just straight price with cost reduction.
Yeah. Remember, freight rates have been coming down quite strongly through the year. Cotton prices are low. Artificial fabrics are low. So there's there is cost reduction throughout the system. But no, there are no changes to payment terms.
Okay. Or quality either. You mentioned quality. Right. So none of those things are affected. I mean, and just the other thing, just as a reminder, you know, what would have been our currency loss for a lot of suppliers where they've got their own currencies in their local currencies would have been their currency gain. So that was really a major part of the discussion with them, Richard. Yeah, but no fundamental changes to what we're buying.
And just to follow up on CapEx, I think you said we're looking at over 400 million for Primark this year.
What
do you expect on the non-prime, the food side?
Similar number on food, I think.
Similar to
Yes, indeed. To this year, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, great. I've passed you by many times, so this lady at the back here. Sorry.
Thanks, it's Alicia for you.
Yeah, Alicia, yes, hi.
Just a couple of questions here. I think I noticed at least one, maybe two, Primark print, I don't know if I call them ads, but sort of promotional stories in some women's magazines that I occasionally read. I think it was Grazia. I was just wondering if that signals a change, perhaps, in thinking towards advertising. And of course, with the move to the US, if you plan to perhaps increase advertising there over time or not. And then on like-for-likes, appreciate the breaking out of the short-term cannibalization impact. But I was also wondering if you could give us some indication of the distribution of like-for-like trends across markets, just broadly. Are they within a narrow range, or is there quite a bit of variability? Just some color would be helpful across the different countries that you're currently in. And then finally, grocery, just wonder if you could clarify or comment on the M&A strategy there. Perhaps there's been a bit more emphasis on health and wellness in recent transactions, and just wondering if you could comment on that. Thank you.
Do you want to take advertising first?
Sure. No fundamental change to advertising. Yes, we do a little bit more, but it's still at a very low level in some magazines. The US, we will advertise store openings, but nothing else. And there's a lot of there is more material that we have made for us online that's available to look at, and that Christmas footage is an example of that. Like for likes, yes, there is a spread. We don't give like for likes by country, but just as an indication, you know, France was spectacular through the year, and Spain was good, but you know, France was, I'll give one number, in the second half was well into the 20s. Yeah, that's clearly not everywhere, but it's only five stores. Grocery, M&A, there is No change of emphasis there. We have some very nice platforms in our UK branded grocery businesses in particular, and if there are brands, for example, Dorset is a good example, which fit into a platform and have their own excellence, then we will look to acquire them. Health and wellness is a very strong trend. I think Dorset fits into that, as do other brands, Ryvita and Jordan's. We're probably better off, given the prices that we've seen of some assets in health and wellness area, to develop our own offerings than to buy someone else's. But M&A has always been part of building strength in our grocery businesses and continues to be.
Great. Okay, further questions? Well, let's take Charles at the end here. And,
thanks very much. Charles Pick of Numis. Three questions, please. Firstly, on the sugar side, 100 million plus of cost savings over the last 3 years. Can you just clarify, please, how much of that came last year? Update us on the beet cost savings that are in the pipeline for this year and next year. And also clarify if the divested Chinese sugar plants lost a material amount last year. Secondly, on Primark, is it possible to indicate what the margin might have been last year had the lesser element of hedging and the extra warehouse costs applied vis-a-vis that 12.6% margin just reported for last financial year? And finally, is it possible, please, to clarify the scale of the bread operations in revenue terms within grocery?
Okay, there's a fair amount of detail within that.
There is. Yes, the
cost reduction, and I think so. We'll
tick-tack. Yeah,
we'll tick-tack. Within sugar, we were well over £50 million of cost savings in the year. The beet costs came down from £32 or so per ton in the UK to £24 that we're paying this year and £20.
The year after.
Yeah. And in Spain, we came down from 40 to 32 this year. John's going to correct me if I
say anything wrong. No, those were exactly that.
And then Primark margin. Well, we would have seen the full extent of the consequences of the euro devaluation from January, February. So we would have had 6 months of it.
And look, do I have a number, Charles? But I mean, you would imagine it could have been something like 100 basis points or something if it had come through. So that's the scale of probably how it's covered. And then you just wanted the scale of the bread business. In revenue terms, Allied Bakeries is about £600 million of sales. Okay. And Australia?
About the same number in dollars.
About, yes, I'm sorry. Great. Okay. Jeremy at the front.
Morning. It's Jeremy Fialco at Redburn. Two Primark questions. The first one is just on this cannibalisation effects. That was 3% this year. Presumably, it will be lower next year, and will it be sort of existent at all? And then the second question is on pricing in Primark. I don't know whether you could just talk a little bit about the sort of broader pricing environment on the high street and whether that has allowed you to recover a little bit of the higher costs through sort of just very, very selective price rises. Thanks.
Yeah. Cannibalization will be lower this year, and therefore there's less drag on the like-for-likes. That, I think, answers your first one. Secondly, pricing on the high street. We haven't moved our prices, and we haven't seen others move their prices either, either in the UK nor in continental Europe. We might not have expected it yet. We'll see what people do when their spring-summer ranges hit the shops.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen a price movement.
Richard, did you have? Okay, fine. Bob Walshman.
Bob Altschmidt from Liberum here. Two questions. In terms of Primark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the US you guys did some partnerships with Uber to get people to the stores.
Yeah.
Who funded that, and do you anticipate using that in further rollouts? And then I guess the second question in particular with Primark is, obviously early days in places like France or Italy still, how many stores do you think those, or at least how much square footage do you think those areas can support? Mm. And then thirdly, on sugar, the element that we haven't talked about in terms of Illovo, Southern Africa, the drought, etc. How are we on that? When do we see profits recovery? How is the weather, etc.? Cognizant the currencies are against you, but
yeah,
but at least the operating performance on the ground. Thank you.
We funded the Uber movement. We moved loads of students from Boston colleges into Downtown Crossing, and that was that worked very well. I don't know whether we're doing it for King of Prussia. I suspect we're not, because simply the Philadelphia hasn't got the same density of colleges. But we are open to all sorts of innovative ways of showing people Primark. The key in the States is to get people into the stores and get them talking about it. So hence moving a few thousand people by Uber in Boston. Sugar operation, though, there was a second part to
well,
your...
Well, there was France and Italy, France the scale of them.
France is a population of 55, 60 million people. Italy has something similar. We're only up to 20 stores, I think, now in the US. We're at the stage in all those markets where we don't have to say this many. We just know that there's a lot of blank space still to move into, and as it becomes available, we open. But given our experience in Spain, where our market shares by volume are up around, well, we're number one by volume in Iberia. Can we get there in Northern Europe and other European markets? Well, I hope so. Sugar operations in Illovo, well, we need the drought to end. I think it probably has broken to some extent. That'll put 200,000 or 300,000 tons, we hope, onto volumes in South Africa and make a manifest difference. A rising world sugar price will make life easier in all African markets, protected or unprotected. And Illovo is doing a good job with their cost reduction programs too. Next 18 months, I'd hope to see profits improving.
Okay, great. Should we go for Richard in the middle here?
I'll take it. Yeah, it's Andy Hughes from UBS. Just a couple more questions on Primark. I mean, the 80 basis point margin decline last year. Any way you can quantify what the markdown change was there, and also where we are in the great scheme of things on markdowns? I know it's been whizzing around a bit. Is this now back to a sort of normal level in FY15?
Yeah, I think you can more or less subtract the one net margin figure from the other, and that gives you the change in the markdown. It is most of it. So 0.8 or so of a percentage point increase in the markdown percentage. That really came from two things. Firstly, that very warm autumn that we had last year led to a greater markdown of autumn winter than we had the year before. And the second one was that we underestimated the success of the new stores in France, which drained stock out of Spain. So the Iberian depot markdown, we were short of stock in Iberia, and that has returned to normal.
We sold virtually everything at full price, didn't we, in France in that first year?
But we let some shoppers down both in France and Iberia, because we just didn't have the stock for them.
And the absolute level, though, is broadly average, is it, for over the period of time?
Yeah, yes. I mean, without giving the level, yes. I mean, we feel it is, but by talking to the Primark management, the discount level is around the level that we've seen in other years, in 15, and it was low in 14.
Yeah, just one last thing on the US. Is there anything you can say in terms of repeat customers to the store? Or
I think we just have to be so careful. You know, it's been very successful first 8 weeks. I mean, repeat is over years. It's not over two visits in a short period of time. As I say, we haven't gone through Thanksgiving. We haven't gone through Christmas. Will they come back in spring, summer? I hope so. but I think the best we're going to say is so far so good. It's been well reported. The prices have amazed people. The fashion ranges are selling well. Outerwear in particular, even though we opened when it was warm still in Boston, sold straight away. That was great. So lots of good things, but one store and very brief. And we did ship people in Uber cabs to get them there. So that, you know. But it's good. It's good. It's good.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Any more questions? Yeah, great. Audrey at the end. Yeah.
Thank you, the boys from Morgan Stanley. A couple of questions on Primark. Number one, in terms of, I know you're not going to discuss current trading, but if you could give us some indication in terms of what you're seeing in terms of competitive intensity, the level of markdowns. Obviously, if you discount the fact that FY14 was abnormal, FY15 was normal, where are we heading for FY16? And given the margin decline that you've guided to for FY16 for Primark, a change in the level of markdown is included in that, or is it just FX? So I just wanted to clarify that. And also, could we discuss your strategy in the US ahead of Black Friday? Thank you.
Shall I just take the margin one first, George, yeah. Maybe and just cover that? So look, I mean, I'm happy in this public forum to say, look, the sort of margin, the margin decline for Primark broadly in FY16 on FY15 is about 150 basis points. The majority of that is driven by FX. I'm not assuming any major change in markdown percentage. The other thing it does incorporate, because some people have asked the question, is probably just a couple of tens of basis points for the increased investment in the warehousing. So it's warehousing, small bit in there, and really driven by FX, and no real change in markdown. Okay.
In terms of what we're seeing in the trading, it's quite hard to disentangle better weather from the ranges and the prices, but this year has started well. So has started well across all our European markets. Coming into Black Friday, I'm not going to say anything specific because it's quite sensitive, but we're much more an everyday low price retailer than we are a discounter. Of course, we will have some offers for Black Friday, but it's one of the really important bits of learning early on is what is right for Primark at Black Friday.
We'll scoot overhead, Jack. I didn't miss you. I think I'll remind you.
Thanks, John. Jack Gorman from Davies. Two quick questions on Primark, please. Just as a follow-up to the margin detail you provided, can you just give us a sense on the phasing of that? So if I think about Primark margin in the second half of next year, how do you think that will compare with the second half of the current year? My first question. The second one relates to return on capital within Primark itself. I think it's still above 30% as reported in your slides this morning. Can you give us a sense of the variance in returns profile, firstly between newer stores, so stores in continental Europe that have had higher sales densities, and then if we think about maybe the US and what that may show in terms of returns profile over time, versus what you've generated in the existing footprint. Thanks.
Should I take the half one, half two first?
Yeah.
And then you could do the return one. Yes, I think we've said in the narrative that I think the margin decline will be higher in H1 and less in H2 of the new financial year. So overall around the 150 basis points. So look, you know, add 20, 30 onto the 150 for the first half and take it off the 150 for the second half is roughly where I'd go at this stage.
Okay. In terms of returns, I mean, it's a statement of the blindingly obvious that the older stores have a higher rate of return because the asset base declines over, you know, so a 10-year-old store just has way less capital employed than the newer ones. I think it is notable that the returns have been climbing as our average estate has gotten newer. And I think that gives you some insight into, well, I think it's an insight into two things. Firstly, the higher leasehold proportion in yes. European stores. Yeah. So in Spain, we don't have a single freehold, for example. But also, it does indicate that the returns across Europe are good. In America, we don't know what the returns are going to be. It depends whether loads of people come and shop with us. We haven't got any freeholds planned at this stage.
Should we take just one of, was there maybe a final question anywhere? Yeah, Alex in the middle. Yeah.
excuse me, Alex Smith at Investec. Just on Granvia, it sounds like it's had a pretty good start. Has that had any impact on trading in your other six or seven stores in Madrid, or are they still trading well?
Very little. Okay. We thought it would have a significant effect on them, and it hasn't. So one of the excitements about Granvia is it seems to be new shoppers rather than the diversion of people who are going to the shopping centres around Madrid where all the other stores are located.
And then a follow-up question on the new DC, I think in Bor.
Yeah.
Is that about servicing new store openings in existing markets that you have, and Italy perhaps, or in 5 years' time, should we think about that servicing some neighbouring Eastern European markets?
No, Bor looks west, looks into Central Europe more than it does look east. So it's parts of Germany in particular.
Thanks. Surprisingly, geographically, it's actually west of Berlin and Vienna, for example. So, yeah. You know, it's really quite far over when you look at it. Okay. Jamie.
Hi, Jamie Merriman at Bernstein. Just a quick one. Can you just talk about what the capacity is for the Bethlehem, Pennsylvania warehouse for Primark? Just how many stores could that support, and how scalable is it?
Yeah, it is scalable, and it's at the moment it's about 500,000 square feet, so a little bit smaller than Mönchengladbach, for example. I don't want to.
That's fine. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.